Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, episode 336, recorded January 15th, 2012. What's with the pineapple? This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT to get 2 bonus months with purchase. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 30% off your new account for 3 months, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code TWIT01. And by GoToMyPC. Take care of last-minute requests from anywhere, right from your phone, with the GoToMyPC app for iPhone. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the promo code TWIT. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app that will save you time and get you paid faster. If your small business relies on invoicing, then you need FreshBooks. Join over 3.5 million users and try FreshBooks for free at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on TWiT. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Oh, man, just back from CES. And I've got an exhausted bunch of people. Actually, no, you know who's not exhausted? O'Malik, because he didn't go. O'Malik from GigaOhm.com. Nevertheless, there was lots of coverage on GigaOhm. But you feel like you could just stay home and watch.
That's right. These days, you know, you don't have to be anywhere to watch news and stuff. But we had Kevin and Ryan, both were doing a great job. And, you know, so I got to chill out in San Francisco.
You're talking about the gadget blogs and all that, yeah?
So yeah.
Joining us also, all the way to the left, and you'll see why in a moment, Danny Sullivan from SearchEngineLand.com. Hi, Danny.
Hi. Good to see you.
Great to have you.
I saw the back of you out at CES. you were being surrounded.
It's the only negative of the skybox that we have, or the top of the stairs box, is that you're facing, you know, because we want the cameras to face out so we can see the floor, so that means you're facing away. So all you ever see is the back of somebody's head. But, hey, that's the price we pay for a great video shot. Let's see. Who else is here? Oh, Tim Stevens from Engadget, who is probably exhausted. Engadget was really all over CES this year.
Thanks. Yes. Our first year with the stage, and that took a lot of planning and not a lot of sleep involved. But, I'm a little tired, but I'm glad to be here.
Trailer with 35 editors. Amazing coverage. And then, there was the stage in the Central Hall. Tim Stevens, editor-in-chief of Engadget.com. And finally, somebody I don't think who's ever been on Twitter. Have you ever been on?
Twitter, but I've been on a couple of times, but never from
Never Luma. In studio.
Never in studio.
So glad you could come in. Larry Magid from CBS and Larry's World.
Yep.
And so nice to see you. Larry's been a longtime commentator. How many CESs has this been for you?
If you add up CESs and Comdexes, it's probably close to 30.
Infinite.
It goes back to the dawn of technology. It goes back to the 80s, put it that way.
We're going to save our CES coverage for the second half of the show because while we were at CES, huge stuff was happening with Google.
Right.
And it was actually a little frustrating. This is not the first time this has happened. I remember CES in 2007 when Apple announced the iPhone. We did not want to be at CES.
Some of our colleagues flew to San Francisco and flew back.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
that's right.
We wanted to be sitting in that audience. iPad announcements. I mean, but this is the first time Google's stolen the thunder. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, if Google did this on purpose. They turned on social search, in effect. Danny, what happened?
Well, Google's had personalized search for going back to, say, 2006. But in 2009, they turned it on for everybody and by default, even if you weren't logged in. And practically nobody noticed this. It just really got no attention at all.
So the search, how does it personalize if you're not logged in?
So it looks at your previous searches that you've done over a period of, I think, 180 days.
Via cookies?
By your cookies.
Wow.
So unless you kept your cookie out, you know, even if you're not signed in, it was already personalizing your results.
I did not know that.
Now, yeah. Well, nobody
what,
really
what if you were in incognito mode or private browsing mode?
If you were in incognito mode, it wouldn't do anything because it shouldn't be getting a cookie in that regard.
Right.
So as far as it's concerned, you're somebody different. And okay. In fact, if you really didn't want personalized results, you would have to use incognito mode to make that happen.
Right. Right.
And so they've had that before. That was already happening. But they have also ramped it up now. And they've taken content that you may have shared through Google+, and they've taken the personalized stuff that they were already doing, and they've kind of mixed it all together, and they switched that on last week. I think it was Tuesday. It's already becoming a blur now. But basically said, okay, we've got this new thing called Search Plus Your World, which I've heard people either say as SPYW, or I've been calling
Spew.
It Search Plus. And
Search Plus is more appropriate because, and Twitter right. Screamed about this, it featured Google Plus social information, but not Facebook and not Twitter.
Yeah, so it does a couple of things. You've got, first of all, the ability where you do a search and it says, here's some personalized results. And by the way, we can see that you shared this information just out on out on Google Plus.
You know, let me show you right now. I'll do a Britney Spears sure. search, something I never do, and hit return. And so the results with the person's head next to it, those are Search Plus My World results.
And what that telling you is that you may have shared it, or somebody you know may have shared it, but for whatever reason, is giving it a little bit more of a boost than it would have done if you were signed out. Although, there's a very good chance that if you click on that little globe button next to it to turn off the personal results, mm-hmm. she'll probably still be up there.
Yeah, because this is her site.
Right.
Although, it does say that she's in 1.4 million Google Plus circles. If I click right. more by Britney Spears, I'm going to get Google Plus. And right. the second result is from Google Plus.
See, if you see it says Vintage Picks by Tumblr, I'm pointing at my screen as if yep. I could point at your screen.
Yeah, yep, yep, right here.
And you see how it's pointing to a Google Plus post.
Yep.
Now, go back up a little bit higher. Click on the globe button off to, there you go.
So this will
click
be in that, high personal results.
Right. See the Tumblr results.
It turned it right off.
And
it's
it wasn't
gone.
Really a Tumblr result. It was a Google Plus post that had been shared by somebody you know. And so it caused that to come up a lot higher, and that was the personalization that was happening.
Notice also when I turn off personalization, Twitter is the third result mm-hmm. after
right.
Britney's site. This is what you want, by the way. Britney's site, Wikipedia, Twitter. That's about right. If I go now, Britney's site, Google Plus, Wikipedia, images, then Twitter.
Images and how they have names on them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those names are images that people you know have shared just with you or with a particular group of people.
These are from
That's
Google
part
Plus.
Of the problem. If you had a Flickr account and you shared information on your Flickr account to just a certain group of people, Google Plus, the Search Plus world won't find that. So it's nice in the sense that
and look at all the YouTube
share.
And look and yeah. this is the other thing that bugs me as a internet broadcaster. Hugely favors YouTube. Right. I mean, these are all YouTube results. If you're not on YouTube, forget it.
So, Danny, can I ask you a question?
And similarly, if you're not on Google Plus, as I'll show you in a moment, you forget it too. But go ahead. Who was that?
Yeah, this is Larry. So, Danny, yeah. So I have a website called safekids.com, and I'm always wanting to see how I'm doing when I search for internet safety or online safety.
Right.
Now, if I'm logged into Google, I'm always going to be number one, right? Because it knows me. It knows that I go to that site. So
yeah,
if I want an objective view of how I'm doing, what do I do? Do I just hit that globe and turn
you
off the personal search?
You tap the globe button, and that'll give you the closest sense that you can have.
I don't have to log out. Does that matter?
You don't have to log out. The globe button should do it. The only other things that will happen that you – there are no more normal results. The normal results are always personalized because even if you're logged out
it's
and
still
you're using the globe button –
So you'd have to use incognito.
Even if you use incognito mode, you're still going to get personalized
oh, wow.
results because of your geography and your language.
Mm.
So, you know, you search for football where you're at. Somebody searches for football in the UK. They're still going to see different results, even if they were logged out in all incognito.
Are we losing some of the value of Google's original algorithms, which are showing us the, quote, most important sites based on some reasonably objective criteria?
Potentially is making it better.
Yeah, in theory, massaging yeah. search results with a social graph gives you more relevant results because people in your social graph picked those results, right?
Right. I mean, if you remember a year ago, Google was coming under great fire that somehow their results were irrelevant because they were being overrun by content farms. Right. At some point, you've got to come up with other signals to figure out how to rank these things. And Google's primary signal has been links, looking at how people link.
Right.
Relatively few people link to material. A lot more people share the material socially. If you can tap into the social signals and have them be trusted, theoretically, you've got some nice signals and you've got the ability to perhaps have better search results that are coming
up. But what
up.
About being self-referential? It's the old joke people used to say back, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know how Nixon got elected. Everybody I know voted for George McGovern. This idea that you live in a world, in a bubble.
It can happen, and yet when you do a search, and I see this time and time again when you have people who try to compare search engines, they do ego searches, and they search for right. themselves. And if they don't find themselves, they declare the search engine must
Well,
die.
You will now because so, it's massaging it to be – when I is, search for it, me, I get all my stuff. It's
exactly.
nice. It's and a warm
it
feeling.
It should be said, by the way – Bing has been personalizing for a year now as well.
You
go in and you're getting the personalization and you cannot even turn it off as easily as you can do with what Google sort of changed. So personalized results are kind of
– That's interesting because some of the response to this has been people moving to Bing, but that's not
yeah,
any better.
And they don't realize that Bing is personalizing as well. It's just personalizing using Facebook.
Hmm. Now, so, what is this at top where it says 200 personal results? What?
So that is a way for you to narrow in and just see the stuff that's been shared. So if you click on that, you'll see just things that have been shared personally, and it'll probably be very heavily on Google Plus stuff.
Yeah, it shows my home address. Thank you very much.
You get to see yourself a lot.
Yeah. Now, only I see that, obviously. Give me a sample search, Danny, that can maybe show up some of these problems.
Well, here's a better thing. Do a search for music.
All right.
All right. And this will get to the core of what Twitter is all upset about. Scroll over there to the right. Oh, sorry. Go back to the beginning. You want to go back to just regular Google because you're still in personalized results. So click on the Google logo.
Click on the Google. Oh, go to the front page.
That should reset it for
Got
you.
It.
And then
okay.
do a search for music.
Okay. There we go.
Now, over there off to the right.
People and pages on Google Plus related to music. Snoop Dogg and Britney.
And note the fun Bing ad showing up there, by the way.
Yeah, I think Bing was smart. They obviously bought that search term.
You've done a search for music, and Google is saying, and they've taken prime real estate where they normally show ads.
Right.
They've moved those down. They're saying, hey, why don't you follow some people and pages on Google Plus?
Now, these are people because I already follow. Would I see people that I don't follow here?
No. Well, first of all, you will not see anybody suggested as a possible person or page that you should follow unless they're on Google Plus.
So actually, Larry is seeing Brittany and Snoop as well, even though you don't follow them.
Neither one of them, as far as I know. They may follow me, but I doubt it. I am seeing different results than you.
You
I'm seeing Yahoo Music as my top.
I get Pandora above that.
Pandora is three down for me.
Go ahead.
But the recommendations, you will get those recommendations even if you're in incognito mode and have no Google Plus account.
And where does that come from? Is that from the number of circles?
It's just Google. Well, the exact way that they decide what to show you isn't specific. They haven't said.
But Britney and Snoop's record label didn't pay for this. This was
no. But Britney and Snoop are there because they're on Google Plus.
Yeah, and they have a lot of followers.
Yes,
1.4 and 1.2 million.
And Katy Perry is not there because she is not on Google Plus.
Wow.
And Lady Gaga, who I don't think is on Google Plus, is not showing up there.
Actually, Lady
Even
Gaga
though
is.
They, as musicians, are among the most followed people over on Facebook.
That's interesting.
So what's happening on that side of the page is Google saying, hey, here are some people to follow because they're on Google Plus. Not, here are some people to follow socially because we are a search engine designed to show you relevant stuff from across the web. You're interested in following people socially. So we have looked at people who are on Facebook and on Twitter and on Google Plus to try to show you some people that may be of interest.
You're right. Lady Gaga is not on Google Plus. So that really, so in other words, Google is using its huge clout in the search market to incentivize everybody.
Yes.
If you're Lady Gaga and you're not on Google Plus,
exactly.
You're crazy. You ought to get on Google Plus. And boy, if I were Twitter, I'd be furious about that.
Exactly.
Can I ask Danny a question? Danny, so this reminds me of back in the day when Microsoft launched the Internet Explorer and basically forced all searches and all traffic to go through the Internet Explorer. Do you see a similarity? And do you really think that there is a case for the U.S. government, Department of Justice, to go after Google on this issue? I mean, your example kind of shows that, you know, you know, technically they're not doing anything wrong, but, you know, when you look at it, they are doing something doesn't add up when you look at that search and music. I don't know what.
So they're, you know, they're currently being investigated. Most people say, you know, the people who are upset with them will say things like, you're promoting your own shopping search engine. And most of those arguments have been kind of laughable because their shopping search engine in turn simply promotes other businesses who aren't charged to be in it.
Well, right? And on music, and I don't know if that's because music is so high profile, but I get a Bing ad, I get Pandora, and I get Yahoo Music before I get Google Music and
right.
YouTube.
So, but you're seeing tailored results. I mean, that might change up a bit. But right. But they're showing you – but you're right. In that main column, they're showing you a diversity of results from across the web. And a really good example is when you do a search on Google and they show you video results, you see lots and lots of YouTube stuff. But technically, they are showing you stuff from Google Video, which includes things beyond YouTube. But this is different. This is really the case where Google has said, we are going to give one of our products preferential service. We are not going to try to show search results for people who are on the web socially and give you an inclusive experience. We're going to just give you the best of Google Plus. And we are going to integrate it so tightly into Google Search that if you are a person or an artist or anybody who wants to be there, you had better open up a Google Plus account. And let's show you the last thing what happens. After you open up that Google Plus account, go do a search now and just start typing in type in Brittany. Just do it slowly.
Okay. B-R-I-T-N.
There. Stop. Look at the bottom. See how Brittany's got her face showing
up
there?
Holy cow, on Google Plus!
And Google is, and if you select it, it's going to take you to her Google Plus profile. Her Google Plus profile is going to fill the entire page.
Wow.
Right? Now, Google could have said, you know what? We think people should have these kind of search suggestions that are showing up there. And so you can register your account so that when people type, it goes directly to your, like, Leo, right?
Perhaps. Look at that. I just typed Leo and the very first result. Now, this is because it's me, though. What if I go global?
It's just because of you, but perhaps you might have preferred that to show up and people get a link that takes you directly to your
Leoville,
own website.
To my blog.
Not
yeah.
to Google+. Or perhaps you might have wanted that to come up and you said, you know what? Most of my activity is over on Facebook. I wanted to go there. You can't do that. It's only Google+ that's going to be promoted in that sort of kind of
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
So, to go back to what you said, in the past, most of these arguments, I thought, if you take a critical look at them, the antitrust arguments start to fall apart. It's kind of like saying, hey, I'm really upset that when I read the Wall Street Journal, I don't get the New York Times sports section, right? The coverage is still going to be inclusive. It's just
but written. That's my problem.
Case,
now, in that case, you've got content providers. And, of course, right. one content provider is not going to promote another. That's the question here. Is Google a content company or a search company? And by intermingling the two, I think that is a serious problem.
And this is the most serious intermingling they've had. I
yes.
mean, there's a few cases. There are a few cases where Google is both a destination where you go to and a search company where you depart from. And YouTube has been one example of that. Google Books has been another. They've had Blogger and a few other things. But Google Plus is something that they're turning into a major destination.
And, so somebody in the chat room said, well, I don't see the problem is Facebook does this. But that's the point. This is Google. Google isn't Facebook.
Right.
So the problem comes into the fact that if you're a dominant player in an industry, you may have to do more than what the less dominant players do.
But don't
and this is what Eric Schmidt said when he was testifying in September, that he recognized that they were a dominant player and that
right.
they might have to do that and that he agreed that they would. But as a search company, they may not be able to preference their Google Plus network more than other networks. Facebook, they're not a search company, so they don't have to. However, Facebook might find themselves in another situation down the line. Somebody could say to Facebook, hey, you are not allowing Google to have access to your data, and yet you will allow that data, or you'll even allow your users to export their email addresses out to Yahoo and Microsoft. Therefore, that is unfair. You're abusing your dominant position. You've got to do the same. So they may face this down the line.
It seems to me that there wouldn't be the issue if there were no Google Plus, if there were no YouTube, if Google were a pure search company, this wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
If they were incorporating Twitter and Facebook. In fact, why don't they incorporate Twitter and Facebook and kind of
well, And that's where this would have not been such a big issue if they had rolled out not a people and places on Google Plus area,
right.
But instead they just rolled out people and places from across. It would have been wonderful, right? You can go right now and say, "Hey, I want to follow some celebrities. Where are their accounts?"
Exactly.
And there are small companies that do that and will tell you, "Hey, Britney Spears, she's on this, she's on that," and you know you can follow her there. And Google could have done the same, and their Google Plus network could have been as part of this overall whole, which would have been fitting into the search engine model they've all done along.
Danny, they used to have a deal with Twitter that expired?
They used to have Twitter results.
Right.
They did, and they still do. And this is where you get some more confusion that comes into play. In fact, I'll probably write up a whole FAQ about this. But so they wanted to do a deal with Facebook, and they couldn't. And so one of their arguments is, well, we don't have Facebook's data. We couldn't even possibly use this stuff. You know, we couldn't do it if we wanted to. And then they had a deal with Twitter where they were getting the full fire hose of all the tweets that are being put out there. And it gave them a good idea. And that's why they built their whole real-time search around that. And that expired about a year ago. The problem is what they're doing, where they're showing you like suggested celebrities to follow. They know what Britney Spears' Facebook account is and her Twitter account is, and they know it really easily because if you go to Britney's Google Plus page, you click on About, she has listed all of her other profiles.
As have I.
And on top of that, they've even verified it.
Right.
So they've got a perfectly good database that they could tap into, but they didn't.
Now, here's a weird thing. Now, this happens with people, but I just did a brand, Coca-Cola. And I know Coca-Cola has a big Google Plus page. I didn't get it.
Now, but try this. Do a search for cars, because this is where it really turns into a marketing thing that everybody will understand. Just do a regular search for cars and hit return.
Oh, now, boy. Look at this. People and pages
Ferrari,
on Google Plus.
BMW.
Oops, I hovered over something.
You want to be number one for cars on Google?
Have a big...
Have a Google Plus page.
All you need is 5,920 people.
Wow.
And you'll be number one. Holy cow.
Now, in fairness...
By the way, there is a link. Learn how you could appear here, too.
Oh, yes.
Click on it, and it'll be like, join Google Plus.
Oh, my God.
Now, can you imagine if it was like, learn how to be in Google search results, and you clicked on a link, and instead of it being like, submit your URL or have a website, it was, open up a Google account.
Maybe they can make an argument that it's, you know... Maybe they can say, look, it doesn't feel right. It doesn't pass the smell test.
Can you argue that it's because it's the right side of the page, that's kind of advertising real estate as opposed to the middle column, which is editorial real estate?
It's really, really complicated there because the FTC actually has guidelines they did about 10 years ago that said if you have promoted content,
it's to
support yourself, you're supposed to make it clear.
Right.
So that's a really gray area. Are you being shown editorial search results? Are you being shown something promoted? Is that area advertising? It's not advertising because they haven't labeled it as they're required to do to follow those guidelines. So, you know, I think Google would argue that it's not really just search results, that the searcher wouldn't expect that they're getting some kind of inclusive thing necessarily. And even if they did, they are saying these are Google Plus things. But I think the bigger question just goes back to Google itself. It just doesn't feel very googly, right? Google's really all been into, we always want to include everything. We want to do the best we can, and we want to have inclusive results. We don't want to have just, you know, one kind of thing happening. And yet they've rolled out something that really is favoring Google Plus in a huge way. That's prime real estate being handed over. And if you do a search and you decide that you want to show people recommendations for people to follow socially about music or about cars or about technology, then you really ought to show the best people from the best social networks wherever those social networks are, not just whoever it is that just happened to use Google Plus. And that's the core of it to me, that they've really stumbled on.
Omni, you have any thoughts on that?
No, I'm just listening to this with fascination.
It is fascinating.
So I just wonder if the whole idea of do no evil is pretty much done as far as Google is concerned.
Now it's grab all the loot you can.
I think it's become do lots of social, and if you're fighting evil, then it's okay. I mean, I've struggled with this, and part of the mindset that I wonder if Google's look. There's some background to all this, right? Google has been extremely paranoid that important data has been locked up, especially behind Facebook. And to be fair, Facebook has done some really weird things. Like, They said they cut a deal with Microsoft to share their social information with Microsoft. They didn't and wouldn't cut one with Google. We don't know exactly why, but there seemed to be some argument over whether or not, you know, you could pull back certain personal information and get it removed or whatever. But the stated answer from Zuckerberg was, well, you know, we think if we work with an underdog, they'll do a better job. Okay, right. But they wouldn't do the deal with Google. They're seeing, I think, the same thing happening with Twitter, and they felt like, I guess, they couldn't get the same sort of data. So in the end, it's like, all right, we are paranoid. Important information that belongs, if you will, to the users themselves is difficult for those users to get out. Like I said.
Well, it's an excellent point.
You go to Facebook, you cannot export the email addresses of all your friends to Google, although you can do that to Microsoft and Yahoo.
Right.
So I think that they may be feeling like, you know what? Maybe this is a little evil, but we're pushing back against a further evil.
And I think it's an excellent point. I mean, I've made this point about both Twitter and Facebook. They are silos, and people are unaware of it. What they're doing is they're pumping all this information into these silos, and both Twitter and Facebook are working as hard as they can to capitalize on this information and ultimately keep it to themselves. And Google obviously saw a threat here because Facebook could do social search. And has all this social graph information. So Google had to respond. Do you feel like Google – I mean, also, I'm sure Google's aware of the fact that this is going to intensify government scrutiny. They're already under investigation. This is just going to intensify it. Do you think that they just said, well, we got to bite the bullet. We're going to take the chance and see what happens?
So I didn't catch that last part.
Well, I'm just wondering if the Google executives, knowing that this is going to piss the government off, still said, well, we have to do it.
I think that the Google executives probably thought they had a justification for everything that they were doing.
Oh, I'm sure they
did. I don't think Google did anything that they didn't feel like they couldn't rationalize. Right. I think they felt like, oh, this is fine. We're not doing anything wrong. We're matching up what we should be doing, and that is all okay.
Right.
You know, so like I said, I don't think they do anything that they don't think that they can't rationalize.
So, Danny,
I wouldn't be surprised if they thought, well, maybe this is something we can do that will cause.
Did you just do that blog post?
I did it yesterday.
What's that?
I was going to say, Larry Magan did a blog post. How and why to turn off Google's personalized search results.
No, it just has a step by step. I didn't do it quite.
Everybody should know this. Larry'sworld.com. That's a good place to find that out.
Anybody, if you need step by step instructions on how to turn it off, you'll find it at Larry'sworld.com.
And I guess the point is, you can turn it off.
Absolutely, you can turn it off. You can turn it off on a search by search basis. Or you can turn it off completely.
But I'm not so much worried about me and whether what I'm seeing. I'm more worried about the fact that Google's using its immense clout in search to promote Google properties and Google content. That's the thing that's always worried me. It's what worries me about YouTube. As a competitor, in effect, to YouTube, because we're doing our own content that isn't on YouTube. I would like that to have a parody. If you search for a term like SOPA, that Twit content has parody with YouTube content. It clearly does not. And so I think that this is a problem. And we don't know why it doesn't. Is it because, you know, we don't have active Google Plus followers? Is it because we really truly aren't as good as YouTube? But it muddies the waters would be my point.
One difficulty with YouTube is that because they have so much content out there, that's one thing where, you know, Google will often say, well, the reason you see so much of it is because there just is so much content that's happening. But
people are saying, well, you use your clout to promote Twit, but you don't understand. My point is a search engine should be above that. You need a pure search engine. If a search engine is promoting its own business interests, then it's not a pure search engine. It's not giving you the best search results. It's giving you the best search results based on my business interests. That's what people want.
Exactly. I've seen a number of people say this, like, well, what's wrong with Google promoting itself? And that is where it falls into place. Google has built its business and built its, you know, if you want, morality around the idea that they should point to the best content from across the web, not just to their own content. There's confusion where people will then say, but they point to Google Shopping as if, well, that's a long time thing of them favoring themselves. Google Shopping is simply a part of Google Search. And it's designed to point to the best content from across the web. You don't go to Google Shopping and then just get stuck on Google. You get pointed out to merchants. So, but this is different. This is really a case of Google going through and saying, maybe there are better things we could do. you know, maybe there's, you know, there are stuff that we could gather about Facebook signals or Twitter signals, but we're just going to use the Google signals that are out there,
Danny,
and go with it.
What about the privacy implications? Now, if I post a picture of me, for example, on Google Plus, I have tremendous control over who can see that. I have privacy tools. I can make it public just to buy circles. But now people are seeing it on search. And true, the only people who are seeing it are the ones that I posted it to. But there's a contextual thing. If I post something on Google Plus and it's seen on Google Plus, does that look and feel a little different if that same information comes up on a search?
Possibly. I mean, I think the harder thing is that people this is like the first time for ages. I mean, you used to have desktop search that got blended with your regular search, but it's the first time for ages where we've had this private or limited shared information that's showing up within what looks like regular search results.
Right.
And I don't think it's so much that people did this, the sharing, and thought, oh, I would have written that differently if I thought it would show up in search for somebody else. I think that there are two different things that happen, that people have shared information and then forget about it and don't realize it may turn up again in a way that they thought it was forgotten.
Right.
Right. And the Facebook timeline's like this, right? If you haven't seen it, it's just great. The Google search plus your world video where Hitler discovers it.
And I love it. I love it.
And it's fantastic.
I would play it, but there's a lot of profanity in it.
Andrew Shaw, he did a great job with it. And there's one scene where, you know, in the hallway, they're all like reacting and Hitler's very upset. And this woman comes up and taps another woman on the shoulder. She goes, oh, by the way, that picture of you at the frat party is up on your Facebook timeline. Okay. But that's what timeline did. It was like you shared all this information. You might have thought, oh, yeah, you kind of forgot about it. And all of a sudden, it was all organized again, put out on your timeline, and people might have thought, oh, I didn't even remember it was out there.
Right.
I want to get rid of that. And so it wasn't that it wasn't visible. It's just that it was made revisible, if you will.
And I think there's something about a contextual place. When you find something out of context, it could have a different meaning than the context in which it was presented. And again, they're not violating your privacy. It's just the way in which they're presenting it may be different than the way you perceived you were posting it.
Exactly. Like when you posted something about, hey, check out my new car, you didn't perceive necessarily that when somebody did a search for cars, your new car was going to show up in their search results, mm-hmm. even though you did give them permission to get it. And then you get into the issue where you probably really didn't think that maybe they thought that was cool, and then they reshared it without thinking about it being limited privately, and they share it out to the world, and suddenly there's your car with your license plate sitting out there.
Right. It's interesting because
I'm so drunk. You know,
right.
That picture of you being so, I'm so drunk shows up.
So to summarize, our chat, it's interesting because almost everybody in our chat room is defending Google and says, hey, it's Google, it's a business, they can promote their own business. What's the problem with that? And you can go somewhere else. Is there anywhere else you can go?
You can go somewhere else. The problem with it is, first of all, it's not what Google itself says it's supposed to be doing. So if you've got a problem with anything and you love Google, you really ought to ask why Google is not doing what Google says it's supposed to be doing, which is providing the best search results from across the web.
Best could depend on what you mean by best, I guess.
I'll show you. Do a search for Facebook.
Oh, interesting.
Do a search on Google for Facebook, and we'll, you know.
Let's see what we get here.
Google fanboys out there can go at this they want.
So what do you think you're going to see, Google fanboys, when I search for Facebook? I get Facebook.
Now, who are they recommending over there on the right-hand side of the page?
Mark Zuckerberg on Google Plus.
Hey, follow Mark Zuckerberg on Google Plus. Bear in mind, this is some of the most valuable real estate for search results that Google has. Go ahead and click on Mark Zuckerberg and show me what Google is recommending out of all the possible things about Mark Zuckerberg that it could put up there, an empty page on Google Plus.
Right.
Is it possible that there is any place else that Mark Zuckerberg is active socially where he shares a little bit more than nothing?
Yeah.
And the answer is, of course, Facebook.
Right.
That's what's wrong with this. That is not relevant. And Google's job as a search engine is to be relevant. So, you know, I've defended Google time and time again.
Eric says, hey, they recommended Facebook.com. You're choosing to look at the right pane.
Dude.
Don't choose to look.
It is Google's search real estate that they are devoting there that they go
it's
through.
It's effectively an ad. They really, I think that's what the FTC is going to say. If you do this, you need to say this is an ad.
The FTC does not say ads show up on the right-hand side of the page. That's not a definition.
No, they need to put ad. They need to be...
Possibly. you know, possibly they need to put out there. And if they did put an ad out there, this would be less of an argument.
Because that's what it
even
is.
Even without the arguments over what the FTC requires, it's not the right user experience. It is not a search engine you expect Google, the leader in search engines, to have provided. And it does not matter whether or not Facebook does it or Twitter does it or Bing does it. It's Google doing it.
Right.
And Google should be doing what Google is supposed to be doing best. Hey, but if the world has changed now and Google has decided, and maybe that's part of the answer, that screw it, everybody else is doing it, we're in too, then there we go. But it makes the world a sadder place.
I'm sad.
Danny Sullivan's here. We're going to take a break. There is another Google story I want to talk about before we move on to CES. Google Kenya is being accused of scouring a rival's database. We'll talk about that in just a bit. But before we do, I want to mention our great friends at Citrix, who make a product called Go to My PC that is the ultimate in remote access. And I want you to take a look at it. Absolutely free. Picture this. You're on your way home. You've been a long, hard day at work. You're just so glad to be heading home. And then you check your phone or you get a text that says, there's something that needs your immediate attention. And you can go back to the office and fix it. And you're saying, oh, no, please, no. See, if you had Go to My PC installed on the office computer, all you'd say is, no problem. You'd pull over, open up. I noticed I said that. Don't keep driving. You pull over, you open your Go to My PC app on your iPhone, and now you're accessing, yes, your iPhone. You're accessing your office computer, and you can get that file and send it off to the person who needs it. You can work. You can send and receive email. You can take care of last-minute requests, not just on the road, anywhere. You can get online with Go to My PC. Edit PowerPoint, update spreadsheets, work on any file right from your iPhone and your iPad and from Android phones and from your desktop and from your laptop. GoToMyPC.com. It's really a great solution. I want you to visit the website, GoToMyPC.com. Click the Try It Free button. Use the offer code TWIT, T-W-I-T. You can try this free for 30 days. The key on this, if you're, you know, there are many remote access solutions. Here's the point of all of this. It's fast. There's nothing faster out there. These guys know the guts of Windows better than anybody, and Mac too. It's secure, 128-bit SSL at all times. You never have to worry. It's easy to install, keeps itself up to date automatically. There's never been a security flaw. This thing is the bomb. I want you to try it. GoToMyPC.com. Click the Try It Free button. The offer code is TWIT. And now, go wherever you want. Enjoy life. Don't worry. You can get things done automatically. We thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Tech. Danny Sullivan is here from SearchEngineLand.com. Poor Tim Stevens. We're going to get to you in a bit. We'll talk about gadgets.
I've got plenty of gadgets to talk about.
You don't have anything to say about this Google thing, apparently.
I guess my big concern isn't so much with the trade concerns. It's more about the legitimacy of search. If all my friends share or plus one on a page with bogus information on it, does that mean that'll be the first search result? I mean, think of all the forewords and crazy conspiracy theories that your friends send you. If all that shows up on Google, does that mean that'll be the number one search result for those sorts of things?
Well, ironically, this is designed to fight spam, and it could open the door to the worst spam ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, if all that spam is coming right from your friends, then it's going to bubble right up to the top of your Google search results.
Yeah, it gives spam more clout. All right, so here's go ahead.
The answer to that, by the way, you know, Google would be is that if your friends are spamming you, you'll probably stop being friends with them.
Yeah, this is true.
But there's spam and spam. So, you know, that stupid squid, and Hitler refers to that stupid squid is going to bubble up with its stupid waving arms to the top of my research results every time. And that's the problem is that, and you know, I have friends who share bad content sometimes. I'm not going to lose them as friends. Maybe I should. Maybe I should get better friends.
Well, or also opinionated content. If you're all of your friends are of like mind, and that's typical. We tend to Democrats hang out with Democrats. Yeah.
All my friends voted for McGovern.
Exactly. If all your friends are that way, you're not going to get a good view of the world if your view is just of your friends. Right. And that's what bothers me. I don't.
Well,
want
that's
bubble.
That's Eliot Pariser's filter bubble issue, which
life
is like that. If you only read the national review, and you know, I mean, people do that anyway.
Fox News, MSNBC.
You're much more likely to get variety on the internet regardless of that filter bubble than anything else.
It's just that if I want to watch Fox News or MSNBC, I know I'm getting results or I'm getting content that's biased by a political odd view.
I don't expect
that in Google. Well,
I think a lot of people watch those channels. Believe they're getting fair and balanced news.
Well, that's the problem. That's a whole other show, Leo. Murdoch, are you listening, Rupert?
So, Kenya. Let's talk about Kenya. Google, what do you make of this, Danny? Mocality, which is a Kenyan startup, it's an online business directory, says that Google Kenya knowingly and systematically accessed its database to steal its customers. It discovered the behavior after monitoring internet traffic and setting up a sting operation. They say they caught Google in the act. Google said, they told the Next Web, well, we're aware that a company in Kenya has accused us of using some of their publicly available customer data without permission, and we're investigating.
They came back later and they said, yeah, their words were, we're mortified.
They did it.
Oh, yeah. No, they said we've looked into it more. We're mortified about what happened and we're investigating it even further. So
is it a rogue employee in Kenya or is this something systematic?
It probably is some rogue employees, but that probably doesn't let them off the hook.
Right.
Because at some point, remember the year started out with, this has not been a good month for Google. The month started out with Google having to penalize its official Chrome page because it was involved in a link buying campaign.
Right.
They were going to do a promotion for Chrome. They went out there. They had a third party firm that they work with, who in turn engaged another third party firm, who in turn got a bunch of mummy bloggers to start linking over to this post. And they decided that technically that was sponsored posts that weren't disclosed. Therefore, they had to penalize their own Chrome page. That was rogue employee, rogue situation number one. Now we're at like rogue situation number two. I don't think people at Google Mountain View ever would have thought, you know what we should do? This is a great idea. Let's go on and go through another rival business database, call them up, tell the customers that we're from Google, we're working with the other company, and they should come over to our new system. I think they would be mortified and horrified that happened. And yet it did. And it's going to fall right down on them. And it's going to be used by their critics to say, aha, see, this is just another sign of Google's institutional activities to try to wipe out everything until they own the entire interwebs.
It's a blot on their escutcheon, if nothing else.
Yeah.
I think the whole company, the way I see Google, is just growing so fast. And it's actually losing a grip on what it's all about. And I think that is a bigger problem they need to confront with. These small things which are happening, you know, first 2 weeks and we've had three big issues on Google, that's a sign of a company which is kind of coming apart and it doesn't have a full control over where it's going. I think whenever I see Google, I see Google going further and further away from its own core mission. And I think when companies do that, they do unnatural things. And unnatural things are things like, you know, scraping somebody's data or, you know, doing, you know, buying link campaigns. And so basically this is, the processes are not there. The company just doesn't have the processes to see and, you know, expand, you know, its thought process and its culture into newcomers and new employees. I think that's a bigger issue for Google. We can look at things in like one small isolation and say, okay, this is a problem, but it has been going on for a very long time. I don't know. What do you think, Danny?
I agree. I think that they have been running very, very hard, and especially over this past year where Larry Page has, you know, taken over as CEO, and we had this declaration that, hey, you know, everything's got to be social. And as John Battelle reminded yesterday, if you start linking everything to social and that's being tied to your paycheck, this might be part of the consequence of it. You know,
that's a good point. They really did incentivize people to do this.
Yeah. And you know, it's like that type of thing, plus that they are so big that – you want them to have an operational pause at this point, you know, and which is something they actually did a few years ago. They had so many products. They said, we're putting everything on hold until we kind of get our heads figured out and see where we're going to be going. And yeah, I agree. I feel like that they may be in that situation where they're just too many different moving parts, too many different things going on, too many things that perhaps they're chasing rather than leading on, right? We got to get this, we got to solve that. And especially the social aspect. Mm-hmm. It just feels like it's being shoved at you so much when you don't necessarily want or didn't ask for Google Plus to be in your search results or Google Plus to be in your reader thing or Google Plus to be over here or there.
I know you have to run, Danny. I want to thank you so much for taking the time because this is, I think, a big topic that we kind of didn't cover because we were at CES and covering that kind of full time. And I think, in fact, a lot of the tech press came back. Right. I know Scoble said, "No, I got to try this because he hadn't been able to. None of us have been able to try it. We've been busy doing other stuff."
Well, there's plenty of CES stuff to keep everybody busy. So to more fun gadget news.
Back to TVs in just a moment. Thank you, Danny. Danny Sullivan is at SearchEngineLand.com. Really the best coverage of this kind of stuff constantly. We didn't even get to a previous post, which I think is really an interesting post to read about how Google is really changing the world for SEO by restricting the amount of information SEOs can get. About who links to you. This is used to be something that was a big deal.
That's what the story was. I thought that was going to explode this week. Fact Google had taken away all the keyword data, said it was due to privacy, and then they roll this thing out. And you realize it has even less to do with privacy than you thought. But
right,
other things happened.
Well, you know, I guess all we can say is it's the day we realized Google was a for-profit business.
Shocking. Oh, my God. I had no idea.
Thank you, Danny.
Google.org.
You're welcome. Take care.
Great to talk to you. Danny Sullivan, SearchEngineLand.com to follow more of this. We are going to get to – actually, you know, I guess we'll do CES next because I want to talk about CES. But then there's also Wednesday is SOPA Day.
Mm-hmm.
And the White House announced that, we would never sign a bill like this. Of course, they've said before we will never sign a bill like this. It was called the National Defense Authorization Act, a bill that would essentially eliminate habeas corpus for military prisoners. And they did sign it. So we don't know what's going on, but we will talk about that in just a little bit. Also want to congratulate our friend Tom Merritt and Ayaz Akhtar and Sarah Lane and Jason Howell on our Tech News Today team. Our news department won a big award at CES this week. Very proud of them. They won the International Association of Web Television Award as Best News Show, Best Online News Show.
Do you want to see the video?
Yeah, let's see the video.
Here we go.
Here they are receiving the award. You know what's cool? The guy who gave the award, Josh Molina, one of my favorites.
This isn't flop sweat. I'm a little out of shape, and this is heavy.
It's really heavy.
It's a big award.
It's huge.
These digital news days, people are just as likely to check their Twitter feed as the Wall Street Journal for the most important news topic of the day. What kind of muffin Coldplay as a band had for breakfast?
That didn't go over too well with the audience, did it?
No.
That was very polite laughter.
Nominees for Best News Web Series are Breakout, Daily Ticker.
By the way, Jason Howell was a little mortified that he didn't have a motion graphic.
No,
like the
we
rest
have to work on that.
Franco Show, The Woodward Report.
Go for it.
The IAW TV award goes to Tech News Today.
Tech News Today!
There they are.
Yay, I'm so proud of them. This is the first year that they've done these awards. You know, I kind of avoid awards shows in general because, you know, I always... I don't know.
Congratulations.
But I'm just very glad we won. I'm just very glad we won. This is a great... This may be the big one, the big award going forward, I have a feeling. We deserve
well,
the
very much.
Congratulations.
You know, niche,
look at them.
Yes, congratulations.
You know, we go for a very targeted audience and
geeks.
We try to do a good job. So
award shows are always relevant when you win.
Yeah, suddenly it got real relevant.
Thanks a lot. We work really hard, so it's nice to be recognized.
Yeah,
thank
we've been
you.
Covering CES. That's why we have this 1,000-yard stare.
And here it is. This is the award. It is heavy. And it looks like French fries. Actually, kind of more like an Escher. thing. Anyway, well, that's nice to have that first one of those.
And by the way, the episode that they submitted, Tim Stevens was on that episode.
Hey, so Tim, you get the award too.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. It almost looks like a Fortress of Solitude to me a little
bit.
Oh,
yeah,
like
it has that.
Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I bet you Tom would like that. So we'll put that on the shelf behind Tom and TNT. Meanwhile, let's check in, see what's going on with the week ahead, Tom.
Actually, we don't have a week ahead.
Never mind. Pretend I said
nothing.
That
was your week ahead.
That was the week ahead. Let's take a break. We will cover CES. Everybody here except for Om Malik was there, and Om is glad, let me tell you. Let me tell you, Om is didn't miss a thing. You said it. I called it one year the Craptastic Electronics Show. There is far more junk than there is good stuff, but we found the good stuff, and we'll tell you what it was in a bit. Before we do that, let me tell you about the good stuff in web hosting. You notice that site that we were on, the InsideTwit.tv site? That's InsideTwit.tv. That's our company blog. That's a Squarespace blog. I defy you right now, everybody who's watching this show, all whatever, 4,000 or 5,000 of you, go to that site and bring it down. Go ahead, try it. You can't. We've tried it before, and that's because it's a Squarespace site. I can bring any site in the world down. I felt really bad. We had a guy, a startup called Warlies. It was a 3D chat avatar. It really looked cool. We got the guy on our CES coverage, and the site went 503 immediately. It just bombed. And I felt bad. In fact, I got an email from him apologizing to all the people who tried to sign up during that. And we're okay now. We come back. But, I mean, that was his big chance. And it bombed. See, if he'd been on Squarespace, no problem. Squarespace is the secret behind exceptional websites. It's web hosting plus the best content management software out there to give your site just a great look, a great feel, and make it responsive. If you go to squarespace.com, they have the best try-it-free policy ever. You click this green button. You don't need a credit card. You don't need any information. You just need the name of your site, a password for your site, and an email address for your site. And you've got that site with all the features, no watermark saying, this is a beta, nothing. You got all the features for 2 weeks. This is a great idea for trying it out. You know what Alex Lindsay does? I've mentioned this before. When he goes to a restaurant or a business that they don't have their own website, during the meal, he'll go on in myfavoriterestaurant.com and create a site for them. And then he'll give it to them. He'll give them the keys. He say, look, I set this up. He'll create it all. Here, have it. Try it for 2 weeks. He's turning people on. He's making people get websites. And that's one great use. By the way, if you already have a site, you can import all of your text, all of your comments, all of your SEO, all of your pictures from movable type, WordPress, Typepad, or Blogger APIs, and export. You're never trapped. They have fantastic apps for iPhone and Android phones and tablets that let you post, check statistics, moderate comments, templates that look gorgeous, photo galleries, Twitter, Flickr, Facebook integration, and more. Take a look at the examples. Give it a free try. And if you decide to buy, we get you 30% off for the first 3 months. How about that? With the offer code TWIT01. T-W-I-T 0 and 1. 30% off. That's only when you buy, though, so don't even worry about that for right now. Just give it a try. Squarespace, the secret behind exceptional websites. Let's just try. We'll do a live test to see if it worked. Inside.twit.tv. Were you able to bring it down, ladies and gentlemen? Let's see. Uh-oh. Did you bring it down?
It's just our internet.
It's my internet. It's really slow.
There you go. You got it.
There we go.
No, it's not down. It's fine. Love it. Thank you, Squarespace. We love you. Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TWIT01.
May I interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes, Eileen Rivera, esteemed producer and host of All About Android Show.
I just want to double check to make sure we are on the same page.
Oh, I did
ads.
The wrong commercial, didn't I?
I have Carbonite and FreshBooks.
Why
as
do
the
I have a
two?
Squarespace?
I don't know.
In this stack. That's all right.
My clipboard says that.
Yeah,
Squarespace
does too.
Is a fabulous site.
You know
anyway,
what they add? So. Yeah, they apps. We got a free ad. How about that? I don't mind. I love them. Free ad just for you, Squarespace. You give us a lot of free stuff. Let's talk about CES. Om, you can weigh in. You could say that's crap. I'd like that if you did that. Take the John C. Dvorak honorary role.
Okay.
That's hard to do.
Let me start with Tim Stevens. You know, one of the things that we go to CES now, there's 150,000 people. There's 3,100 booths this year. There's 6,000 in the press corps. It's an overwhelming, I don't know how many football fields, hundreds of football fields worth of stuff. But one of the things,
biggest show ever.
It's huge. One of the things we always try to do is create a narrative around that. Like, what was the story of CES? Almost impossible. What was the story of CES, Tim Stevens of Engadget?
I think this year the story was the lack of a story.
It wasn't a big one.
Indeed, it could be one.
Yeah.
It seemed like slow progression in lots of logical areas. We got LTE smartphones, which of course were expected, but we saw, you know, LTE is now almost a common feature across all carriers and all manufacturers. So if anything, that's a story that LTE is now effectively what you're going to expect to see on all carriers. So that's something. We saw bigger screens, of course, and better processors and things like that as well. On the smartphone front, same sort of progress on the tablet front, higher resolution displays on the new Transformer Prime, for example, a 1080p display. On
that Transformer Prime, that is a cool product. Running ice cream sandwich, the latest Android. Yeah. 20 hours battery life with the dock. And you said, as you said, HD resolution. Was it 1280 by 720? What was the resolution on it?
It's greater than 1080p, I believe. It's 1920 by 2000, I think it is. So it's on a 10-inch panel, which is fantastic.
And quad-core.
Yes. It's Tegra 3 graphics. So it's actually got that
1920 by 1200. Thank you, Jeff, in our chat.
It is. So, it's got great power. And we've seen the Tegra 3 chipset offering not only great power, but also great battery life. Like you mentioned, in my test on the current Transformer Prime, I got 16 hours with the keyboard dock. So they're saying we might even get a little bit better with this new model, which is pretty interesting. So that, to me, is great to see. We also spoke with Texas Instruments, who showed us their new TI OMAP processor, which isn't going to be hitting devices until sometime later this year. But it was the same basic theme that we're going to be seeing much better performance and also much better battery life out of their new chipset, which is fantastic news because, in my opinion, I think we're at a point now where gadgets are pretty quick. But battery life is still atrocious on the majority of Android tablets and Android phones and even phones on other platforms as well. So I'm really hoping to see a big battery life improvement. I think that's something we'll see going into the next CES. Right now, we're not really seeing any big advancements. But it seems like the foundation is being put in place to allow that kind of thing.
Intel was showing off Ultrabooks. The only computers at the show were the Ultrabook laptops. And
it definitely was a big year for Ultrabooks, for sure. The platform has existed for quite a while now, but this is the first CES where we saw almost an overwhelming number of the things. It just seemed like every computer manufacturer had their own take on the Ultrabook recipe.
Actually, Asus was a winner there, too, I think, with the ZenBook. That's my favorite. Although Lenovo had that funny yoga.
Bendable, yes, the yoga, yes.
It was a convertible, so it turned into a tablet. There it is. Here we've got a video of the Lenovo Yoga. I think best name. Winner for the best name at CES. I'm so bored with these 94T37 and all of that stuff.
They actually had a concept transformer a couple of years ago called the Yoga as well, but it was much smaller, like the size of a tablet P just about.
So the idea is it's a normal laptop. You see it running Windows 8 there. But the hinge, I don't know why more people don't do this, goes all the way around. So we're going to speed it up a little bit.
You have a Windows 8 tablet.
Yeah.
That was definitely a very innovative product. And that was the kind of product that I thought we'd see a lot more of. I thought we'd be seeing a lot more crazy Windows 8 devices that were fitting in between.
That was a surprise to me. There was no Windows 8. Now, I think you have to blame Microsoft for this because they didn't. They're still with the original developer preview. They didn't update that. They didn't talk about Windows 8 much at all. And there were very few Windows 8 devices. And all of them were kind of running that developer preview. So.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a big story in the
Microsoft keynote the night before the show properly kicked off.
Right.
And they spent a lot of time demoing Windows 8, but ultimately they didn't really show us anything
new
or exciting. They didn't show me anything that really entailed bringing the platform together, which we talked a bit about at CES. I didn't really see that much interaction between Windows Phone and Windows 8 or between the Xbox 360 and Windows 8, which is what I really wanted to see.
Except that Metro is the interface across the entire Microsoft line. That was they really hit that hard.
So they might not work together, but they at least look pretty much the same.
Yeah, because the Metro ARM tablets won't run Windows software. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of a phony across the line kind of a thing. They did have the Tweet Choir, however, which I think is really every keynote from now on should have the Tweet Choir. This was the Las Vegas Mass Choir. They're no doubt talented,
but a little out of context.
Live tweets, or I'm sorry, singing live.
Do you think
tweets.
They were really live, or did they actually get those beforehand?
I think somebody told me they. He told me they were reading them. Like they're on a screen in front of them. Everyone can go
ahead. I was in the room. It didn't seem that live to me, but maybe it was.
No, it seemed a little staged to me as well. It was definitely.
You think he memorized that before, or were these fake? Do you think these were fake?
They were. It was a real choir.
No, I know they were a real choir.
Were real tweets as well, but the question is how early did they go in, and did they have a little bit of time to prepare before the keynote began?
Yeah.
I don't want to be too cynical. It was definitely an impressive feat either way, and it was one of the more entertaining.
It was more impressive than
one of
Bombers.
The few entertaining parts of that keynote, I'll put it that way.
Ryan Seacrest, did he get an A-plus for making Steve Ballmer seem extremely uncomfortable or just a little uncomfortable?
Ryan Seacrest pretty much phoned it in my opinion. He was sitting up there reading the script between takes of you know, they'd be doing the demo of Windows 8, and Seacrest would be up there reading his script.
You could just see him saying, "Where's my check?" Waiting for the check.
He's got this Bing partnership for advertising, I think, and I wonder if this isn't maybe
just part of that.
Part of his contractual obligation.
Here is my favorite moment of the tweet choir, my favorite tweet of the tweet choir, because I just love the way she adds some drama to this tweet. Okie dokie.
They were good. They were definitely very good.
You know, maybe
there's
that,
also
maybe...
there's an auto-tuned rap of Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates at the beginning too, which was pretty good.
Now, I think there was a big announcement at this, which was the Lumia 900, Nokia's phone designed for the U.S. market. They have a similar phone in the European market with a smaller screen, no front-facing camera. This is a sweet phone, and this may be the phone that Microsoft needs to get Windows Phone 7.5 off the map, on the map.
And it could be the phone that Nokia needs to make
save
an impact
Nokia.
To reemerge here in the United States. Nobody really knows who Nokia is. When you talk to general consumers, they might have had a Nokia phone back
years
in the late
ago.
90s.
Yeah.
But this is definitely a fantastic phone. It's the new 900. It's great performance in theory. It's, you know, still single core, but it should be pretty quick and pretty smooth. Should have a great camera, of course, as we expect, and a big, beautiful screen. That is, unfortunately, though, still WVGA.
Really? Yeah. It's an OLED display, though, I think.
It is an OLED display, so the quality is going to be very good in terms of saturation and brightness. The resolution, though, that's still... part of the package when you get Windows Phone right now, you still get a WVGA display across the board. I think that's something that Microsoft will be working on through the year, increasing resolution and also moving from single core to dual core processors. Those are two things that are part of the package of Windows Phone right now. But at least we are now seeing LTE devices. This was one of the first, of course. We did see a few Windows Phone devices with LTE. So going forward, at least that platform will now be able to keep up on data speeds. But now it needs the processors and the resolution to really be able to keep up with the rest of the competition that we saw from HTC, from Samsung, and from everybody else.
The LTE from both Verizon and AT&T was available at CES in Vegas. I wasn't able to try it. Were either of you able to try it?
I wasn't able to try
it. How fast was it, Tim?
We had AT&T LTE dongles, and I also had a Verizon LTE dongle. Before the show began, we were seeing about 20 megabits down on AT&T and about 8 megabits up. Once things got going, of course, it slowed down a bit. It was down to about 8 down and 2 or 3 up, which is pretty fantastic given the number of people and the number of devices there. But, of course, AT&T just really flipped the switch on LTE in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, so that's not really to be surprised. I don't think it was saturated, which is exactly why we wanted to be on it, because we knew that there wouldn't be too many other people on it. Verizon, we saw typically 10 to 15 megabits down and, again, 2 or 3 up.
Well, that's
so pretty
good.
Comparable speeds.
That's nice.
I was on Sprint's WiMAX, and it was much slower.
WiMAX is terrible.
It did not work well at Vegas.
And Sprint, in fact, is I think they're canning that as well.
I want to run by – I actually did find a theme of the show of sorts, which is, remember years ago, both Gates and Jobs talked about the PC or the Mac as the hub of your digital life.
Yeah. Now it's the hub.
It struck me that at this show, what people were saying is the mobile phone as the hub of our physical life. And by
that's
I mean
true.
Craftsman garage door opener that you open with, or you check your mobile phone. LG and all of their smart appliances, right? The washing machine sends a message to your mobile phone telling you that it's time to put the clothes in the dryer. The refrigerator tells you that your yogurt's going bad, all on the mobile phone. I saw so many devices. Schlag, you open the lock with your mobile phone. And it just seemed to me, and this, by the way, is the subject of my column in tomorrow's San Jose Mercury News. It'll be on Larry's World in the morning, about how the mobile phone really has become the core of our physical, of our real-world lives.
Absolutely. We even saw quite a bit of automotive technology built around the smartphone. Mercedes Embrace, for example, you can unlock your car from your smartphone. OnStar has an app as well that you can do that. We saw applications where instead of having some cars, you can have one key for yourself and maybe one key for your wife. And based on what key comes to the car, the seat will adjust itself. Well, now there are systems like that tie to your smartphone, so you don't even need to worry about the key. It's depending on what smartphone comes to the car will adjust your radio presets, your seating position, and get the car ready for yourself. And I think with things like Google Wallet as well, more and more of our identity is moving to our devices, which to me is good because I'm kind of sick of carrying around a wallet. And I'm kind of sick of carrying around keys.
Right.
If I could walk up to my front door and put my phone up to the doorbell and have the door open, or walk up to my car with my phone in my pocket and have the car unlock and the lights turn on, that to me sounds ideal, so long as, of course, I don't lose my cell phone.
I wonder if I can hack my way into your house. Instead of hiring a thug to break your door, I'm going to hire a hacker to get in there.
Well, they're already doing that with cars. We've seen hackers hack cars from a distance, even.
Yeah, we have.
One of the interesting uses of NFC, apparently, I know some people talked about this, is for Bluetooth pairing, to simplify the pairing, which will be great if I can tap my phone on something and say, pair, you son of a gun.
And by the way, Ford is really big into the apps tied in with their new electric cars, their new hybrid cars, finding charging stations, finding how well, whether your car needs to be charged.
Every manufacturer.
Heavy into that.
Well, now, by the way, we should mention Ford's a sponsor.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Disclaimer. But I'll say this. Every manufacturer, although I thought this was weird, Mercedes showed a Facebook app for its car. I do not want people updating their status while they're driving down the highway at 80 miles an hour.
Well, it's funny. I interviewed Mulally, the CEO of
the
Ford.
Concept? Did you see the concept dash that Mercedes-Benz had, which tied social networking into driving in a very interesting way?
You could say where you're going, where your GPS is, would give a status update to Facebook.
I think this whole distracted driving issue is going to get bigger and bigger.
Actually, let's talk about that.
Absolutely.
We were at a dinner. Veronica was there, Patrick Norton, Molly Wood, Becky Worley, Walt Mossberg and David Pogue, a bunch of tech journalists were at a dinner with Alan Mulally that night. And Mossberg kind of hijacked the whole thing. What a surprise. And challenging Alan about this issue. He said, now I want to know what you guys say. He said that there is a grassroots movement in every city of the nation to get legislation against distracted driving, that this has become a huge hot button for people. And he said, what are you going to do? What is Ford going to do when it's made illegal to make a phone call in your car, let alone Facebook? You can't even use Bluetooth phones.
What are you going to do? It's definitely something that's becoming a bigger and bigger issue.
Do you hear this groundswell, Tim? I mean, was that true?
Yeah, absolutely. The NHTSA is also looking at defining.
The NTSB said that all use of any phone.
NTSB, not the NHTSA. Yes, so it's definitely becoming a bigger issue. And a lot of these things that we saw at the show would be very distracting. That concept Mercedes dash I was talking about would show you if your friend happened to be running by while you're driving, it would pop up their profile information on the windscreen. It would project on the windscreen, which is pretty cool. And so I asked Mercedes, of course, what does this mean for distracted driving? Aren't you going to be looking at that and run over somebody else? And their answer was, well, this is the dash of 5 to 10 years of the future. By then, the cars will be driving themselves anyway, so you can do whatever you want to. But of course, we're looking at the next 2 or 3 years, which is going to be, I don't think we'll be seeing self-driving cars on the road in any number.
No. I asked Alan about that, and he, Mulally, the CEO of Ford, came from Boeing, where he said, I was responsible for every Boeing fly-by-wire cockpit right up to the 777. And he said, you don't see pilots, he said these planes can take off and land by themselves, but you don't see pilots doing that. He says there needs to be a human at the wheel. We will give them lots of information. We will support them. We will tell them if they're drifting out of the lane. We'll tell them if they're running too close to the car ahead. We can do all of that. In fact, They have now backup sensors. You not only have a backup camera, but they have sensors that look left and right to tell you if there's an oncoming car, which is great because I've actually gotten hit by backing out of a slot. But he says you got to have a human at the wheel. And I do wonder. Somebody else asked him, when do we get our flying cars? And he said never. He said never.
Well, they're cloud vehicles. Vehicles in the cloud. Well, I talked with him earlier in the day, and we talked a lot about this distracted driving issue. And
it's a big issue.
It's a big issue. And they claim, of course, that they've got great technology to make it easier, voice controls. They're big on voice controls. And I have to say voice controls are nice. By the way, I got pulled over in Nevada for talking to Siri on my cell phone. I picked up my phone.
Yes, because you held your phone.
I had my phone.
You're not allowed to get
it. And I said, Siri.
No.
And I was going to – Bluetooth, I had everything right. But I was told, never touch your phone. Never.
Same
hold
in California.
Phone.
You may not touch that phone.
So now I have my phone. Can you see the Velcro? I have my phone Velcroed to the dash, right?
Right.
So that's legal.
The dash?
I can legally, as long as it's Velcroed to the dash, I can legally touch it. I can stare at it. But if I take it like this and I say, Siri, find me the brick house.
One of our employees got pulled over because she was flipping her phone around in her hand.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know what? Go ahead, Dom.
So the thing, you know, I was watching all the feeds and reading all the news about CES, and most of this conversation you guys are having and most of the devices I saw, none of them answered this one question. What problem are they trying to solve?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it's like, why is Facebook status update from a friend important while I'm driving? First of all, I don't drive, so I wouldn't even know how they're
it's
all
not
coping.
Home. Take it from a driver.
Right. So I think there is a lot of people doing things for the sake of doing things and trying to keep up and, you know, imagine that they can keep up with somebody like Apple, for instance, and see that they're trying to predict what the next behavior is going to be without really thinking about what problem they're going to solve. And I think that was a big, big, you know, my takeaway from this CES was just that.
I think that a lot of CES is trying to create demand. It's trying to invent demand. It's not an answer to a problem or an existing issue. It's trying to create new demand. And, you know, remember Steve Jobs quoting Henry Ford, who said, if I'd asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said, you know, what did he say?
Faster horse.
Faster horses. Right. You can't necessarily in this industry ask customers what they want. You kind of have to point them in a direction and create a demand for something. Did people say we needed Siri before Siri existed? Did people say we needed an iPhone before an iPhone existed? I don't know. Maybe they did.
Do you want your washing machine sending you an email telling you that it's time to put the clothes in the dryer?
Actually, that's a text.
I kind of would like that because I don't know how many times I've done a load of laundry and then forgotten about it. And two or three days later, I go to do another load of laundry and find that the first load is still sitting there, but now it's all musty, of course, because it's been sitting in the washer for a couple of days. But whether or not this is solving problems, no, it's not. But all cars now are pretty good. I mean, it doesn't really matter what kind of car you buy. It's going to be pretty reliable. It's going to be reasonably good to drive. It's going to be reasonably safe. So auto manufacturers are really looking for ways to stand out, and technology is a great way for them to do that, whether it's Facebook updates or whether it's the MyFord app integration. Excuse me.
AppLink. You are AppLink, tired. You're buzzed.
3 hours sleep today.
That's a CES buzz. I recognize it.
thank you. The AppLink app, which of course they just added 6 new apps to, that gives you streaming music and that kind of thing. I mean, that's the kind of thing that to, you know, an 18 to 24 year old buyer is going to make their ears perk up. And if somebody at Chevy or somebody at Hyundai doesn't have that kind of thing, that might make them buy the Focus instead of a Kia.
Ford did say that. They said it drives a lot of demand for cars. That's
I agree that. I agree with that because what it is doing is it's replacing existing user behavior of listening to radio with a new kind of listening to music, right? Which is not very different than what we've done in a car. We're just using a new way of doing things. However, a lot of these things which these people have been experimenting with are not even clear, like why? Like, why do we need this? And you know, and actually it's a very vendor-centric approach to introducing features and technology and not like people-centric approach to introducing technology. Yes, you know, Steve Jobs, this is not a Steve Jobs-like comparison. I'm thinking more like these guys are introducing incremental things we don't really make a lot of sense over, you know, like when it comes to usage. And I think that's what I was having an issue with. Like Pandora or something like Pandora or Spotify on your dashboard connected via whether it's LTE or Wi-Fi or whatever makes perfect sense because that's how we listen to music now on our computers. So it just is a behavior which translates easily to the web, to the car, you know, environment. And we don't have to deal with, you know, like, you know, fiddling with too many buttons on Pandora, for example.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And I think that's a lot of what you see at CES is people throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. They're trying to create demand. And you're right. Fundamentally, that is a flawed way to invent something. You know, you want to find a problem that needs solving. But this is a big show. There's 3,100 right. booths. There's got to be some crap. In fact, somebody in the chat room is asking us for our worst of CES. And maybe if you guys could do some thinking, I'll think of some of the worst things that we saw at CES. Here is a big story that you guys came up with at GigaOM. Actually, your Kevin Fitchard pointed this out. Verizon told CNET that Verizon will no longer accept any smart device that doesn't support its LTE network. And Kevin pointed out, hey, that means the iPhone 5 is going to be LTE. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that would be nice.
It sure would. It sure would. Especially if it's LTE on AT&T, which I think is we agree, the fastest out there right now. Maybe because it's underused. I tell you what, I couldn't use 3G on my iPhone at all.
Oh, it's terrible.
I couldn't last year, couldn't this year. Horrible.
Pretty much the whole week.
By the way, I drove down to CES, and I have a Pioneer head unit in my car, which connects to my iPhone, and I listen to Pandora the whole way.
Isn't that great?
But here's the irony.
Do you got to feel sorry for terrestrial radio. You work at CBS.
I worry about terrestrial radio. I used to work at KGO, which
kind of everybody got fired. Terrestrial radio.
I actually had a discussion with my colleagues at CBS Radio about this 2 or 3 years ago when the iPhone, it was AOL radio, made stations available. AOL radio isn't what it was. But the fact is that I can listen to CBS online. I can listen to you in my car, which means you are now a direct competitor to CBS radio.
That's right.
Well, I don't know if I like that, Leo. but the bottom line is that content providers have got to think of themselves as content providers and stop thinking of themselves as broadcasters.
That's right.
And that's true.
That's absolutely
true. And the car was the one bastion that terrestrial radio owns.
That's right.
And it's going away.
In-car listening was the only thing that kept AM radio alive.
And FM too, yeah. So it's a concern. But we're dealing with it.
What about OLED TVs? I bet you don't. You don't drive a car. You don't eat meat. I bet you don't watch TV either.
I do watch TV, though not your live television as we've known it. I don't have cable.
You're a cable cutter.
Yeah, I am. And I watch all my TV on Hulu and Netflix.
Look at the thickness. Wait a minute. Oh my God. That thing is 4 millimeters thick. It's like a plane of glass. You know, actually, this video does capture how brilliant that screen is. It is gorgeous.
I do want that.
You do want that. Trust me.
In 3D, it's actually really amazing.
This is an OLED screen. LG and Samsung both showed OLED screens at 55 inches, biggest we've ever seen. Sony, which killed its 11-inch $2,500 OLED screen, had something they called Crystal LCD, which I'm pretty sure was an OLED screen also. This is and both LG and Samsung say they will be selling these by the end of this year. This is a real product. I don't know what the prices will be.
$8,000.
$5,000 to $8,000? Yeah, I would guess $5,000. What do you think, Tim? Do you have a price point?
We're hearing around $7,000 or $8,000. At this point, it's all guesses, but I would guess it'd be somewhere in the $5,000 to $10,000 range, roughly around $8,000.
You will want this TV. I guarantee you the minute you see it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you will. It's beautiful. Both of them are beautiful. I couldn't tell the difference between the two in terms of panel clarity, but of course they weren't anywhere near each other.
Both
beautiful.
I asked Robert Herron, who does HD Nation, an HD TV expert, one of the founding members of Twit. He said the Samsung's going to be the winner because they're using a sub-pixel rendering on the LG display, a white pixel with filters, whereas the Samsung is true RGB. But you got it. You're right. You got it. Boy, they both look good to me.
That's amazing.
Not seeing them. Look at the thickness of that.
Yeah.
All the guts are in the base, by the way. So if you do get this and want to put it on your wall, you're going to have to punch a hole in the wall or have wires.
And Gillette's doing a version that uses as a razor.
You could shave with it. Yeah. Actually, that was my favorite product. Schick.
Yes.
I don't know why, but every year Schick is at CES, yeah, the razor company. Yep. And they had a barber there who was doing hot, you know, towel and then shaving you with a Schick. And it was actually, I got one. It was a good, it's actually a very good blade.
I almost got one too, but I decided I didn't really quite want to shave just yet. It's still pretty cold up here in New York.
You'd have to find something else.
And a ladies' version is forthcoming. I checked.
You know, that's funny because Natalie Morris asked me, Natalie Morris said, do they do this for ladies too?
They're coming.
There's a lady Schick on its way. So the OLEDs, were they're all 1080p, of course, 55 inches, beautiful, rich, deep blacks, whites that are perfect. Price, yeah, it'll be crazy.
At first.
Yeah. But I think the point is that they're able now to make these displays in quantity, which I think they've never been able to do. We asked him about display life, because one of the issues of OLED displays has been in the past that the blue dye had a very short lifespan. They claim to have fixed it and have 30,000 hours, which is about half what plasma does. But it's still 10 years of 8 hours a day viewing. It's plenty of life.
If you watch that much TV, you have other problems.
Yeah, yes, really. You can buy a new one in 10 years.
So I have a question for you guys. Now that with all these TVs coming out, which is the best TV to buy right now, which is a bargain?
So you want it now, you want it cheap, and you want good.
Yeah.
Tim Stevens, in Gadget Editor-in-Chief.
Well, there's definitely talk that LCD prices could actually go up over the next 12 months or so. So if you're looking for a new TV, it might not be a bad idea to pick one up now. Definitely, I would say an LCD. I mean, there are a selection of plasmas that are still available, and they do give kind of the look of an OLED with very deep, rich blacks and good contrast. But they're heavier. They use a lot more power. They give off a lot more heat.
If these OLEDs come out, I think plasmas are dead.
Yeah.
Plasmas are absolutely dead because OLEDs will do everything that a plasma does better with lower power consumption. And hopefully they won't have the lifespan or burn-in problems down the road a little bit too. Of course, the cost is going to be huge. So I would say right now go with an edge-lit LED display. It'll give you close to the thinness of an OLED display.
Oh, yeah, they're gorgeous.
Considerably cheaper.
I like Samsung a lot, although Vizio is going to give you a better price. Right. And I think Vizio is quite good for the price.
I have a three-year-old Vizio, and I'm still happy with it. It's great. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the thickness issue, it's very cool to have a thin TV. Yeah, but the reality is it's up against the wall. Right. Unless you live in a really tiny, tiny apartment, that extra inch or two is not going to make a difference in your life.
Exactly. That's what Morris is saying in the chat room. Who cares how thin they are, you know? But it's like anything else. The thinner and richer, the better.
Right.
I have to say, the top of the line TVs right now are those Sharp Elite TV sets, but they're the same price as this OLED will be in the fall. They're $6,000, $8,000. I think that we are going to see a revolution. If you could hold off. Now, the other thing that's revolutionary is these in-TV apps, the speech interfaces. The Samsung has a built-in camera that you can do Kinect-style gesturing to or talk to. This is early days, and I bet you these things suck for the first 1 or 2 years. But we're clearly moving into that world of new TV interfaces. TV as computer. These are dual-core processors.
So, Leo, instead of mom and dad fighting over the remote control, they're going to see who can scream loudest or wave the most.
I can't wait.
How are we going to control that?
Shut up! I want to watch Oprah! Shut up! I want to watch Judge Judy!
Yep.
I could just imagine.
The louder the screaming, the better your chances. Yep.
The TV goes back and forth. This Samsung TV will recognize you.
Yep.
And so it will configure itself for your settings, which is pretty amazing. LG had Google TV built into its set. Lenovo announced a TV with ice cream sandwich. Not Google TV, but just ice cream sandwich.
In China only.
China only? Okay.
Yes. Yeah, for Ed Firth in April.
But I do think that, there's the facial recognition, by the way. I do think that... this is a revolution in television, and it's very good. I like it because it's very good for people like me who are internet-only broadcasters. Mm-hmm. Every TV that comes out from now on will have an internet connection, and will have apps, and will have the ability to put shows like Twit on a parity with everything.
Now, I have a Roku. I hardly ever watch cable anymore.
I love
it's
Roku.
It's all Roku. It's love all Roku. You and Netflix and Amazon.
Yeah.
I get to pick the programming.
It's an absolute revolution, and it's really good for internet broadcasters. And now you see why YouTube's strategy. There was a good article in the New Yorker this week did he pronounce it Kinsel, the new guy who's in charge of content, the guy who's putting out $100 million for new content channels, which launched next week on YouTube. And basically, that's YouTube's play. They want to be IPTV for the next generation. They want to.
It looks like even Hulu's going to make their own content.
Yes.
So, yeah. So Hulu, Netflix, and YouTube are doing their own content, which kind of tells you, you know, who's got the power. I think the Hollywood's, you know, center of gravity shifting to Silicon Valley a little bit.
Well, except for the fact that the places Hulu and Netflix are going to get their content is Hollywood, YouTube a little less so.
Right. Like HBO.
No, I'm talking about from a monetary standpoint. Like that's where, you know, the initially all the whether distribution and production was concentrated very heavily in LA, and now it's, you know, distribution is not in Hollywood and it's in Silicon Valley. And production wise, you know, still Hollywood is still Hollywood.
Well, I think the content will still much of it come from Hollywood. Who really gets disintermediated and ultimately screwed are the aggregators, the people like the television networks, cable companies like Comcast. Comcast all of a sudden is going to be selling bits at wholesale to, you know, and instead of these premium priced retail bits where they sell a whole channel. I think we're going to see a big shift in the we've been saying this for how many years?
Right.
It's finally starting to happen.
Well, here's a news story right now. Hulu will broadcast its first original scripted series next month, a political comedy that will debut during the real-life Republican presidential primary.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I don't know who's producing this for it, but again, you're absolutely right.
So don't watch the news. Watch the sitcom.
Or if you're going to watch news, watch Jon Stewart.
Yeah. That's true. And that worries me a little bit, actually.
I think
fake news has more credibility than real news.
Fake news is the real news.
Yeah.
And, you know, Leo, when you were doing Tech TV, I mean, that was like a $100 million project, right?
A year?
Yeah, and that was dying because the distribution was controlled by essentially what was Hollywood.
That's right.
And look at you now. And, like, you know, you probably have, you know, five times the audience and 100 times the engagement compared to that time. You know, I was there with you at that time. So, you know, this thing is, you know, I probably was one of the few people who actually paid for it.
Yep. You know? Thank you.
So it is very different now. And I think there is going to be more smaller success stories like yourself as this distribution gets more democratic. I think that's the big shift. We saw the production and distribution get democratized in music, and we've seen a huge jump in creation of music and new artists and people just coming out of nowhere. And I think we're going to see similar shift in video as well. And it's taken a lot longer because it's just more expensive kind of a, you know, operation. I mean, yours is not an easy operation to bootstrap.
Yeah, but it's still a lot cheaper than Tech TV was. I mean,
that's true.
How long is it going to be democratic, I wonder? I mean, how long is it until Hulu and Netflix are just like ABC and NBC, and then we get into the same network battles again that we're seeing now?
And this is why I'm a little tetchy about Google and YouTube, because it's almost as if the company that owns the guide on your cable channel, if they produced all the content and they made sure that all their content were, you know, somehow highlighted on their cable guide, that would be a huge advantage. And in my opinion, that's exactly what's happening. Google is the cable guide to the internet. It's the guide to the internet, but they're producing content and they're highlighting it. That puts me at a disadvantage, even though in theory we should be equals, you know, on the search anyway. So I wish Google, in fact, my goal for 2012 is to have Google spin off YouTube. It's obviously profitable. Spin it off into a separate standalone company and avoid all of this entanglement that it's getting into. I think that's a pipe dream. However, obviously, Google loves the entanglement it's getting into.
And Google TV is only exacerbating
that. It's hugely valuable. Right. And I just, you know, I hope that Google doesn't start making Google TV. Well, it has a YouTube channel, but I hope that my Twitch channel sitting next to the YouTube channel is a parody and equal. And when you do a search, it does search through my stuff as well as their stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll take a break. Come back with more. Microsoft pulled out of CES. It's this last year, Steve Ballmer's last keynote. The space, I was told by the CEA, the floor space for Microsoft's booth sold in 45 minutes. We don't know who to, but the rumor was Dish Network bought it. Dish is kind of near where Microsoft is, but not as prime a real estate. I just hope they keep that really soft carpet. Doesn't Microsoft
have I love the soft carpet.
They have the best carpet.
Beautiful. It's great on your feet when you're walking around all day long and your feet
you
are getting a little bit sore.
That's how you know.
You start to cut through the booths because it's much more comfortable.
If somebody says, I was at CES, and you don't believe it, you just say, well, which carpet did you prefer? They say, what? Then you know they're lying. It's Microsoft all the way. We're going to take a break, talk about backup, and then come back with more. There's a lot more, including an egg-throwing incident in China that turns out to be a big story. But first... How do you like that for a tease? But first, let's talk about backing your stuff up with Carbonite.com. Their slogan, this is a new slogan. I used to say you got to back it up to get it back. Their new slogan is back up, move forward. I think that sounds a little confusing. That should be Ford's slogan. Back up, move forward. Automatic online backup, anytime, anywhere access. Carbonite is the best deal in cloud storage. Try it right now free for 2 weeks. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code TWIT. Now, the original Carbonite, $59 a year, less than $5 a month, for everything on your internal drive. Perfect for a laptop, just this whole thing. Every time I'm online, it's automatically backing up. My data is always up to date. I can access it from any computer. I log onto my Carbonite account, iPhone, iPad, Android. It's all there, BlackBerry. I can see. So it's cloud storage, less than $5 a month. For unlimited. Now, people say all the time to me, well, what about if I have a lot of external drives? They do now have a plan for that. Windows only, they're working on the Mac version. What if I'm a business, I have multiple computers? They do have a plan for that. So go to Carbonite.com, take a look at the various plans. No matter which you want to use, 2 weeks free with the offer code TWIT. Actually, I think the business has a month free with the offer code TWIT. And if you decide to buy 14 months for the price of 12, two bonus months, when you use our name, TWIT, no credit card needed, just the offer code TWIT. Give it a try. I think you're going to love it. Carbonite is backup exactly how you would have designed it if you'd thought about it. And, you know, automatic, online, encrypted storage that's available anywhere. $5 a month. Carbonite.com. We thank them so much for their support of the TWIT program. Apple... The iPhone 4S. So what happened in China? There are five stores in Apple stores in China. They sell some absurd percentage of all Apple gear, something like 16% of all Apple gear is sold by five stores in China. They had the iPhone 4S, and what's amazing is this thing must cost a significant amount of money compared to the average income in China. I don't know what it is, but I can only imagine. But I guess the plutocrats in China, of which there is a growing, middle and upper class, were hiring workers from the country to come and get in line at the Apple store to get them their iPhone. They'd pay these guys like a day's wage, which is peanuts, to get in line, but 15 RMB. And when the Apple stores didn't open on time, the crowds got rowdy. Police ordered the stores not be opened. So this is the mistake. The Apple guy comes out and says, we're going to cancel the launch of the 4S. At this point, the people who have been waiting all night, they're not going to get paid their 15 RMB. Mm-hmm. They brought eggs with them.
You have to eat.
They start pelting the store. Look, there's a guy. There's Jason. From Friday the 13th, there's a guy wearing.
This happened to go down on Friday the 13th. We tend to have a little bit of fun on Friday the 13th.
It is Friday. So I see.
It's nice of him to show up anyway.
You added that. The eggs. That was an Easter egg.
We do Easter eggs on Friday the 13th.
Oh,
we have Jason hiding in a lot of our pictures, so that the secret's out now. But there are also legitimate eggs there being tossed at the windows, which is unfortunate.
I thought some smart worker was wearing a hockey mask.
No, that was an amazing Photoshop from one of our editors.
That is hysterical.
If you look back on Friday the 13th, just about every post should have some little tidbit from Friday the 13th, and then whether it's a machete hiding somewhere, maybe a little bit of blood somewhere.
Well, you're going to have a lot of fun because I think 2012 has more Friday the 13ths in it than we've had.
I can't wait. This is our favorite days of the year. We have a lot of fun.
Obviously, you're not superstitious.
No.
So they're not going to sell the 4S in Apple stores at all for the time being. Apple's like freaked out. Where's this money coming from? It's very interesting. There must be. Do you have any insight in this? As our token representative of the third world?
Did you really say that?
I did. I thought about it, and the sensor just, I don't know, I guess it was taking a break.
You know, it used to be the third world. It's no longer. I was in Paris with you, do you remember, for Le Web, and I went into a store trying to buy something, and they had two representatives who spoke perfect Mandarin and perfect Hindi to sell to these people.
Oh,
so that kind of tells you there is a lot of money in those places.
And, absolutely.
You know, I think China is going to be the largest economy in a few years. And so, you know, we cannot really say they are the third world. Yes, they have a huge income disparities, but so do we in the United States. And I think so there is, you know, it says a lot about Apple, though, you know, a product made in China, you know, and sold in China at a massive premium. That says everything about a company and a brand. You know, I think a lot of people don't quite give them credit for that. But I do think this is going, you know, iPhone 4S or iPhone or Apple products, they have an aspirational quality both in China, in India, in Brazil, in Russia. And just like, you know, the Gucci's and the of the world have, and Mercedes and BMWs have an aspirational value. So I think that's why you're seeing a lot of people line up and you know, pay. And I think the average salaries in China are going up. I mean, if you go to Shanghai, you know, it does definitely feel like a very expensive city.
Oh, Beijing, too. I've never seen such an amazing...
I've never been to Beijing, so I don't know.
Oh, it's incredible. It's the most vibrant... But you know, it's also a very agricultural country. You get outside the big industrial areas, and it's basically a peasant economy. So, you know, as you say, there's an income disparity there. Is it, when you say aspirational, do you mean it's a status symbol?
Yeah. I mean, and in, you know, at least from where I come from, you know, status symbols matter a whole lot, whether it's, at least in India, there is a huge pull of these famous, you know, global brands. And I think China is essentially the same. You know, there is huge amount of value accorded to these brands. Like, you know, it is, you know, the official color there is red, so that should explain.
So it isn't about functionality there. It really is about, this is a status symbol. This isn't because it's a better phone. In fact, I'm sure there are Chinese clones. In fact, I know. I've seen iPhone clones running Android.
Absolutely, there are iPhone clones.
Yeah.
And you know, there was a time when blue jeans were a great commodity in Russia.
That.
Remember that? All the Russians wanted their blue jeans.
When we went to Czechoslovakia when I was a kid in 67, we packed blue jeans.
Absolutely.
It was much more valuable than gold.
That's right.
If you could bring a blue jean in there. And I remember when we were in Egypt a couple of years ago, ballpoint pens were a huge, valuable commodity.
Well, I'm going to the Middle East. I'll bring a bunch
bring
of
ballpoint pens.
Hey, pay my way back.
Yeah.
Any particular kind, like the Fisher Space Pen? Or the,
no, they don't. Bring a Bic.
Oh,
seriously,
okay.
Cheap ballpoint pens were very valued. Very valued. It's interesting. I don't know what that means. But I saw a very interesting article, and I don't know if you guys saw this. It's from TNL.net. And this is a little bit telling. What they did is they did a survey of what of the top 100 movies in 2011, which of them are on Netflix, which of the streaming, which of them are Netflix streaming, by the way, which of them are on Amazon, which of them on iTunes, and which of them on Vudu, and which are available on DVD. And they broke it all down. And when you get to the stats, it's actually a little chilling. If I were Netflix, I'd worry. Of the top 10 movies, zero are on Netflix, seven on Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, and DVD. Of the top 25, zero are on Netflix, 16 Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, 19 DVD. Of the top 50, four on Netflix. Of the top 100, only five are available on Netflix streaming, almost half available on iTunes, Amazon, and Vudu. And 74 out of the top 100 on DVD. Now, that I don't think that's Netflix's fault. I don't think Netflix is failing to make the deals. I think the movie industry's trying to squeeze them to death.
I think you need to compare it to HBO and Showtime. Netflix is not where you go to see the latest movie. It's where you go to see the backlist, to see the movies that were great 10 years ago or 50 years ago in some cases. I watch old classics on Netflix. And if you were to ask Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, he would be the first to admit that it is just a choice. But Netflix is where it's late at night. I'm tired. I don't feel like thinking. I go in there and I pick a movie, much like I used to do on HBO and Showtime.
Well, it's funny. Now I go to Video On Demand and I pay $6 for the latest movie. But if I want – you're right. If I want to see a kind of a weirdo movie or Red Dwarf or something, I will go to Netflix and watch it there. So they both have a role. And at $7.99 a month, I guess Netflix streaming is cheap enough. It's like one and a half VOD
movies. I worry about it when the Starz contract ends, which will be in March, and they're going to lose some of their titles, some of their newer titles, a lot of their newer titles.
Right.
And that's going to be a real challenge for them.
I'm surprised that Netflix hasn't launched some sort of a premium streaming tier where you can do a pay-on-demand sort of streaming for these newer movies that would then be additional to the standard all-you-can-eat kind of streaming package that they already have. Because that's what we're really looking at here. Even though those seven top tens are on Amazon, you can't pay a flat fee and view them. You have to rent them.
Right.
The same thing with iTunes, that kind of thing. So it's a different pricing structure and a different sort of service that I'm very surprised Netflix hasn't jumped into yet, and maybe that's something that we'll see in the year ahead.
But I don't think you could blame Netflix in the long run. It really is Netflix being squeezed by Hollywood, who says, we're not going to give you our good stuff. What are you, nuts?
Sure.
What are you, crazy?
When's the last time you actually put a DVD into a player?
It's been a long time. I have five Netflix DVDs
sitting around
gathering dust from 6 months ago on my DVD player, because even though I could, you know, I just, it's so much easier just to press play on the Roku.
That's right. You better return those, because they're going to hit you for the full value eventually.
I know. Eventually, when? It doesn't.
Actually, as long as you keep paying now, what, the $16 a month?
I'm paying for it.
I dropped that a long time
they
ago.
They love me. Are you kidding?
I pay the $7.99 a month, and I'm very
happy. I've paid hundreds of dollars for those
DVDs. Right. Yeah.
They love me. As far as I continue to rent them for $17 a month, they're happy.
Right.
I saw somebody say, and I think this is interesting, that Netflix streaming has really given people, you know, behavior is very interesting. TiVo never gained ground, but it totally transformed how we watch TV from being appointment television. We all had to watch Ed Sullivan on Sunday night. The VCR began that shift, but it wasn't until DVRs that we really accepted the idea that we did not have to watch a show when it was on. We watch it whenever we want. On demand has furthered that. And those, so our habits get changed by these technologies. Somebody was saying that Netflix streaming is really turning us into channel surfers with movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you buy a DVD or lease or rent a DVD and you put it in, you're going to watch it because you don't have another one, for one thing. Even if it's crappy, you spend a lot of money for it.
Right.
But Netflix, I don't mind going watching 5 minutes of a movie going, this is crap.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the next one, this is crap. Channel surfing movies.
I do that, and I go back and forth between Netflix and Amazon Instant Prime. You know, with Amazon, if you have the Prime service for $80 a year,
right,
you don't have as big a library, but it's a better deal than Netflix.
I do both.
And I do both as well, and I occasionally pay for a movie on Amazon or iTunes.
What's amazing is who needs, you know, network television or cable anymore? There's all this great stuff.
Well, can I put a word in for CBS News?
please.
Well, no,
keep
I mean,
watching.
If you want to watch, no, seriously, if you want the latest sports, the latest news.
Hey, we're watching the football game right now.
Right, but you're watching it on either broadcast or cable or satellite, I bet.
Nobody's listening. How many people are watching this stream? Actually, the good news is geeks hate sports. Some of us.
We watch it.
Our gaming show is coming up. If you're interested in gaming, we're about an hour away from the launch of our very new and very exciting game show. It's called Game On. Brian Brushwood and Veronica Belmont will host. And I got to tell you, I've been watching some of the pieces they're putting together for this. It is the Daily Show of video gaming. I promise you, you're going to love this. Here come Veronica and Brushwood. We got to come up with a name for you two. Like BB and VB. How about that? BB and VB? Hey, everybody. So,
hi, Veronica.
What are we going to call them? BB and VB?
I like the dork duo.
The duo of dorks? Oh, she's patting home. Oh.
Veronica Belmont. Yeah.
I cannot
Beshwood?
Tell you. What? Beshwood?
Beshwood or what else? Batman and Catwoman? Bellblock?
Brushmont?
Wait, that's you guys.
No, because.
Yeah. Bellwood?
Because Ryan and I joke and say Blockmont sometimes.
Blockmont's good. No, you can't do that. You have to be a couple to do that. You two are just good friends.
Yeah, we're not Brangelina.
It makes, Om, you talk about how the growth of the Twit Network, the fact that we could get these two, some of the most talented presenters in any medium, to do a show about gaming and the production value we're going to put into this, it really is a huge step forward for TWiT. And it really, I think if we could pull this off, I think it will show that you can do an internet production, an independent internet company can do stuff that's just as good as anything on broadcast. I'm very excited. You guys are the greatest.
I'm excited too now.
Yeah, Tim.
Jittery excited.
Are you buzzing?
It's like I've been drinking for the last 3
hours. You guys came running out here like, oh.
I'm so excited. It feels like I haven't slept
in
7 days.
You haven't.
We were backstage just sort of like, we're in that weird doldrums where we've done all the pre-work, all the scripts are written, all of the pre-production stuff is done, and we can't quite start setting up. And so it's like we're just back there spinning our wheels. Finally, we just went live on Justin TV to take our minds off of it. Yeah,
that's cute.
We're just like, please, somebody talk to us.
Oh, good. So where is that channel?
Justin.tv/scamschoolbrian, all spelled out.
Great.
So right now you can see an empty editing bay.
Empty
you
jump bay. Over
there. And the Giants just pulled ahead with another touchdown. I think it might be all over.
Uh-oh.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Sports is happening, right?
I would love to see
that. That's not the games we're
covering. That means the Niners will be playing at home. Yeah. If the Giants win, the Niners play at home.
Clearly, that is not the kind of games we are covering.
Not those games.
All right. Baseball season again.
We got 15 more minutes for TWiT. Then they're going to get out here. They have to set up the set. We're going to leave the cameras on while you set up, though, so they can watch. And if you can't stand it, you can go watch JustinTV/ScamSchoolBrian. This is like Google, except not, because I just sent everybody away from our show. So I guess it's not like
very kind of you.
Well, Google sends people off to links.
That's
sort
right.
of.
That's Wait. Right.
No, that was like Google Plus and Google Search all in one thing.
All in one mess. Yeah. Actually, Ohm wrote an interesting article, which I want to talk about, the surprise of the week. And then we'll get your worst of CES picks as we continue. But first, a word from FreshBooks.com. If you're in business for yourself, there's one thing that you hate. Invoicing. I hated it so much that I didn't do it. The problem with not invoicing is then you don't get paid. So it's a vicious cycle. You want to break this. I would sometimes invoice 6 months late and they'd say, what is this? We're not going to, you want what? So this is the thing. In 2004, Amber MacArthur told me about this company because they're based in Toronto, FreshBooks. And it changed everything. With FreshBooks, I uploaded my logo. I was able to create invoices online. They are emailed to your clients in the PDF form. There's a button on the email that says pay now. And because of that, you know, it turns out your clients don't – it's not that they don't want to pay you. It's that they're just like you. It's a pain in the butt. So if you make it easy for them, they pay. You can even set up automatic invoicing and paying that just happens. If you keep track of your timesheets, it'll actually take – they have apps for that on the phone or on your desktop. And it'll import those hours automatically, which makes it much easier – to invoice. They will send out paper invoices for an additional fee. That's cool. It's free, though, for your first 3 clients. 3.5 million people now since I found FreshBooks in 2004. Since then, 3.5 million users at FreshBooks.com. I want you to go there. There's no offer code because it's free for the first 3 no matter what. But do say you heard it on TWiT if they ask. I don't know if they're going to ask, but if they do. It's just fantastic. If you're a small business, if you're in business for yourself, the last thing you want to do is invoicing. Even if you have a bookkeeper, I know many bookkeepers who use this. It's so much easier. FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks.com. And yes, they will be glad to get you signed up. And if you look at the pricing, it's such a good deal. Free for the first 3. And then it's very affordable for additional clients. Try it. Setup only takes a minute. You don't need a credit card. Just a company name and email and you get your FreshBooks page started and you're going. FreshBooks.com. Oh, Malik wrote a surprising post this week. You know what's bigger than Google Plus? MySpace.
Not dead yet.
But it is dead, isn't it? Isn't it, Ohm?
Oh, yeah. It's completely dead.
This April Fool's.
I mean, really, what is the turnaround strategy? Now, Justin Timberlake is one turnaround strategy. He was at CES pushing this.
Well, Comscore says they're not dead, at least in the U.S., which is, you know, it was pretty surprising to me. That's why I did a tiny little blog post.
And of course, now it's living on, right?
Like, I didn't really think it was, people really cared now that we moved on to bigger things, but apparently, people still care about MySpace. I think what I do think there is a lot of music acts which have MySpace pages and people who follow them. And I think that's what is keeping the site going. Now, the interesting part is that the average time spent is just negligible compared to Facebook and Tumblr and some of the others, even Twitter. And so it's not really doing that well from that perspective. So it is people using it as like, you know how GeoCities didn't go away for a very long time?
Right.
I think that's what we're seeing on this one.
Almost 25 million uniques a month. That's pretty good.
Yeah, and I hope,
what's a surprise on this picture, on this chart is Pinterest.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, MySpace, Tumblr, Google+, and Pinterest. What?
Yeah, Pinterest is the new thing.
It's not even public yet. You still have to get an invite, don't you?
Well, if it's good for Martha Stewart, it's good for a lot of people.
Oh, Martha? Is that what's going on? Is Martha's?
No, it is on MarthaStewart.com. So that's where they got it.
So I have an invite. It's there's an iPhone app. There's a website. And the idea, and I frankly, I don't find this compelling in the least, is you just kind of bookmark stuff and you put it in categories. And I don't get it.
So, the way to think about Pinterest is this is like, how people go window shopping in the real world. This is window shopping in the online world. That's how I see it. Like, a lot of it is aspirational. People want to buy these things. But it's also a very interesting tool to kind of create, pins or, create collections of things you like. A lot of people I know who are using it are just completely addicted to
really?
It.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. It didn't grab me at all.
It's very addictive, yeah.
Really? All right. So, all right. Well, I have an account. I should really...
You should try it and say, create like a Leo's, pin for all crazy things he saw at CES.
It is very Martha Stewart-y.
Pretty photographs.
Yeah, well, it's very photo-focused.
Yeah.
One thing I don't like is they call people who use Pinterest pinners. that is slang for a very, very thin joint, right?
Really?
Marijuana cigarette, right?
Now you tell me.
But I could see the financial. I could see the business model here because you can do things like search for gifts from $50 to $100, and people apparently have pinned these things, and now I'm seeing all these are all gifts, in that price range. So if I'm a husband who has been thrown out of the house, I could just buy this spotlight bracelet for $95 and my life would change.
So I heard from somebody who's in the business of selling things, and they said that Pinterest was driving more sales and more traffic to them than any of the other services right now.
Well, it stuns me to see that those numbers on that Comscore chart because it's not even public.
Yeah, I just requested an invite.
You have to request an invite, and it's already like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, number 7, right after Google Plus. With 88 average minutes per visitor.
So I wrote about them a little while ago, maybe earlier this week or last week, I can't remember. But it was essentially talking about what's going on. And, as I said, earlier, that we are beginning to mimic a lot of offline behavior online. And Pinterest is just that. My argument about Pinterest was that, when I was younger, all my, friends or lady friends and all, they would create like collages and, from the things they would rip out of Vogue and Cosmopolitan and all those kind of magazines.
Oh, so it's a lady thing.
Well, it's very popular with the ladies. Even the guys use it, but it's really popular with the ladies.
Interesting.
And it's like driving commerce now. It's like and it's only going to get bigger. Just wait and see.
Facebook has just added a new feature called Listen with friends. If a friend is listening to a song, you can listen to the same song exactly at the same time as they do. Loic Lemur is listening to Bitch Please featuring Exhibit by Snoop Dogg. And if I wished to, I could listen to it with him.
But if you broadcast it, you might get kicked off.
I choose not to. Yeah. Anyway, regardless.
They're taking a cue from this service, Turntable FM, right?
Right, right.
Facebook, the great place where they take other people's ideas and turn them into mass market You know, it's the new Facebook, is the new Microsoft.
And that's how I wonder how MySpace can survive if their whole thing is music when Facebook is going big into the music direction as well.
You know, I use Spotify. It's totally integrated in. When I play a Spotify track, all my friends know. Now they can listen at the same time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just and then you look at Apple's Ping, which is like, it's like, how could you go so wrong? And you see why Facebook, in fact, disconnected from Ping. Giants won. All right.
Do you like that, Leo?
I do like that because what I'm going for is a Super Bowl where brother meets brother, like the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the and so that's what we're. What are you laughing at? That's what we're going for. It also means the Niners. Hey, Lisa, congratulations! The Niners play at home next week. So, our CEO, who is a major Niners fan, gets one more game at Candlestick Park before they shut the whole thing down. Just saying. Hey, boy, this has been fun. I just love you guys, and I'm sorry that the way that the information worked out. Some of you had something to say about one chunk, but not another. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was a great conversation. Tim Stevens is editor-in-chief of Engadget. He's been pinning his Pinteresting his eyelids up with toothpicks, but you can now let them flop forward and sleep for four days. I hope you
do. Thank you. Yeah, I would love to, but unfortunately, it's right back to the news tomorrow morning. So we got to get right back to the news.
You wanted to be a blogger, dude. I don't know. You know.
Hey, I have no regrets. It was a fantastic week. No regrets at all. It was amazing.
How many editors? 35 editors, and not just Engadget US. All the international editors as well.
We have representatives from Engadget Spanish and Japanese and Chinese there as well, covering the show live. And we had a couple of video crews and the full design team of our distro the tablet magazine that we have was on site. They did two special editions of Distro that week. Normally they only do one, so they weren't getting much sleep either. It was a long week for everybody, but it was great.
Well, it only happens once a year. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
Thank you. It's really great to have you, Tim. Thank you. Pleasure to be here. Coming in. Larry Maggott, we should just have you all the time from CBS News, larrysworld.com, a very astute observer of the technology scene. And a finder of lost children.
I have found a lost child. I see a lost dog wandering around.
That's
here.
Mine, yes. That's,
okay, we'll leave that one
Don't
alone.
Report him to. That's what is right. it? You've been working for a long time with the Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Yeah, I actually worked mostly on their internet safety work.
And I love it. The internet contract that you designed for them, all of that stuff.
Thanks.
Where can people find out more about it?
You can find out a lot at safekids.com. That's my own site, safekids.com, and also connectsafely.org, which is a nonprofit that I set up with Ann Collier a couple years ago.
It's very, very important.
Thank you.
Oh, I forgot. Your worst of CES.
Oh, a boombox. A $30,000 boombox?
A $30,000 boombox?
You could barely fit it in this studio. I can't remember the vendor. I don't even want to think about it.
Who needs to?
That's absolutely nobody.
The worst.
Yeah.
Tim Stevens, did you have a moment that was the worst of the crap gadgets articles? A pretty good place to start.
Yes. If you scroll down, that's the one. The wash your bag. That's it.
What is that? Go back. Watch your bag.
Right there. That is an alarm clock that is shaped to look like a hand holding a shopping bag, and it lights up with rainbow colors. that's it. That's my favorite crap.
And Ohm said that people weren't solving real problems.
Yes, there you go.
All right.
It will wake you gently with rainbow colors from its bag. That was found, I believe, deep in the International Hall, and it's a real gem.
By the way,
I could have taken that home with
our chat mod Dan says that boombox, the $30,000 boombox, was from Behringer. It's called the iNuke, and it's not just a boombox, dude. You left out the most important part. It's an iPod dock.
It's an iPod dock.
That's all that it is. It has $30,000
iPod dock.
It's this giant, massive, 6-foot-wide thing with a tiny little iPod dock on top.
See how strong you have to carry that on your shoulder.
There's nothing else. That's it. Just an iPod dock. Excess. It's the embodiment of
it comes with a truck, by the way.
Oh, my God. Oh, Malik doesn't know what the worst of CES was because he thinks it's all crap.
Oh, don't put words in my mouth, but the sentiment is pretty clear, though. I do see in the chat room somebody said that there should be a show called Geeks of a Certain Age. I think with Larry, you know, Dvorak, you, probably me, in about 2 years, we should do that show.
Oh, you know, last week we did Jerry Pournelle, John C. Dvorak, and Dwight Silverman and me, and so it was the silver-haired quadruples. In fact, I'm kind of afraid that Twit's going to get a reputation as being for older folks. So that's why we're going to bring out two young people in a moment. They're really, really great kids who have done such a great job entertaining us We're going to have the Game On shows about to premiere. Om Malik is at GigaOm.com. Great to have you always. You once called me the Yoda of tech. You, my friend, are the Yoda of tech.
Well, I don't know. I would take that from you. You're the man. I think all of us who are watching Twitch right now would agree to that.
You're very kind. But I think you're one of the smartest, best analysts out there. And we love having you on. I really appreciate you coming by.
Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, Om Malik. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do this show Sundays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time at twit.tv. You can always download the show. In fact, do me a favor and subscribe. That way you always get a copy. You can have audio or video. We have a variety of formats for you. You can subscribe on iTunes, the Zune Marketplace, or anywhere better podcasts are made available. Just look for Twit. There's quite a few good shows. Thank you all for being here. Stay tuned. The launch of our brand-new gaming show with Brian and Veronica is coming up in minutes. Another twit.
This is amazing.